Good morning and welcome to Brass Tack Sunday, brought to you in association with Williams Industries Incorporated. Today, we are talking about corruption and the cost of corruption to you, Barbadians, and to Barbados on a macro level. Now, as I've seen and I've observed, there have been increased innuendo and accusations of corruption. And as we enter the imminent, the impending election season, you can only imagine that this would be on the increase. Notwithstanding that, there's objective measurement of corruption via the corruption index and so on. But when we think of things like the Auditor General's report and lots of rumors and speculations about rampant and sometimes not so rampant corruption, one must understand the linkage to you, the taxpayer. Now, a lot of times I hear people talking about, what if this happens, what if that happens? It ain't my money. It is their money. You know, if they sell it or they don't sell it, that's their thing. And I think a lot of times we forget the linkage to us, the citizen. What is the link of corruption to you, the citizen? Well, in studio, I have three very, very special guests who are going to walk us through this whole idea of corruption and the cost of corruption. First of all, let me introduce Mr. Devron Bruce. He currently holds a degree in political science and international relations from the University of the West Indies. He's pursuing a postgraduate studies in political science. Additionally, he's a contributor to the Millennium Voices column for Barbados Today on constitutional reform and the Integrity Group Barbados column on good governance in the nation, Barbados, the newspaper. Devron also has a background in political commentary, research, and education. Allow me to welcome Mr. Bruce to the VOB studios. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Right. Of course, we also have with us a very special guest indeed in Josh Drayton. Now, I'm going to remind you a bit about what he does, but I'm going to take this opportunity on the top of the program to give you an understanding of his wide background in relation to this whole idea of corruption and what it is, and also on the other hand, integrity as well. So Josh Drayton is a researcher in anti-corruption, governance, and public policy. He has over 10 years experience teaching in areas of anti-corruption, governance, public policy at the University of the West Indies, St. Augustine campus. He was the lead researcher for Trinidad and Tobago in the Global Integrity Money, Politics, and Transparency Project, which measured political finance indicators in 50 countries around the world. He was also the first open government independent researcher for Trinidad and the English-speaking Caribbean. In addition to being a researcher, Josh has contributed to the development of civil society in Trinidad and Tobago and the wider Caribbean by developing the Civil Society Accountability Toolkit, conducting workshops, and internal accountability and transparency for CSOs, that's civil society organizations. Ladies and gentlemen, let me welcome to the Brass Tacks and VOB studio, Mr. Josh Drayton. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, and good morning to the listeners of Barbados.
Wonderful to have you, definitely.
Thank you.
And our third, and by no means least at all, panelist is Crystal Howell. I don't know, even know if I need to introduce Crystal Howell, but of course, she would have really been remembered for bringing the Auditor General's report to the public in a way that they could understand, that they can dissect, that they could see the relationship between our money, our taxpayers' dollars, and what it was happening in relation to auditing such events happening in Barbados in relation to government spend. She is an internal auditor, an internal audit manager for Sagicor over the last 6 years. Previous to that, she would have worked with Ernst & Young and been working on the external audit end on in that respect. Now, in her spirit, you know her for her dance, her art, and these various things. But in the limelight, you will know her in relation to her talk show host, the Crystal Career Project, and also a contributor to The Nation as well. It gives me great pleasure to welcome back to the studios at VOB here at Starcom, Crystal Howell. Good morning and welcome.
Morning, everyone.
You know, Cropover coming up again, and I have a different name for her during Cropover, but we'll leave that be for now.
Cropover starts in April.
Good. So we got next month we deal with that. All right, good babies. So with no further ado, I want to ask the question. Let's start off with getting the public involved in this discussion immediately. When we are talking about corruption, what do we mean? What is corruption? Anybody could go first.
So I'll jump in and then Devron. So one of the widely used definitions of corruption is the misuse or abuse of entrusted power for private gain. And typically within that definition, you have two main actors. One that has power, and one, of course, that is vulnerable or is a victim. So whenever we think about different types of corruption, we can think about nepotism, the use of, again, entrusted power to employ persons that are close to you at the disadvantage of someone else who may be eligible, or bribery, where you may have an instance where someone may accept an advantage. It may be cash, or it may be some other kind of advantage in order to gain benefits for someone else. Now, typically, you have two actors, but when we come down to political corruption, you usually have more than two actors. And this is where it becomes very complex. So the definition of the abuse or misuse of entrusted power for private gain goes a bit beyond, because what you have is actor A, who has the power, actor B, who has a public interest, and then a third party that is benefiting. So actor A isn't benefiting, the politician isn't directly benefiting. So when, for example, someone who is a politician or involved in political corruption, they may do something, they may get votes indirectly, but what they're doing is to benefit a different party. So it comes back down to this thing of corruption being a bit more complex than just two actors. And I think that's where the problem starts in terms of how do we address it.
Yes, Josh had mentioned political corruption, for instance, and that's essentially tailoring laws to act in a private sector or a private entity's interests. For instance, you could have a very strict law initially, and an administration may come in and weaken that law to act in the interests of someone else for their benefit. And that is usually done through probably things such as bribery. Political corruption can also go into areas such as embezzlement as well. And the granting of large contracts, for instance, not based on merit, but based through some kind of relations that are not of, just not based on meritocracy, essentially, using bribes to get your way in government. And, you know, political corruption can also go into what we would call more so bureaucratic, where we have a situation like the granting of smaller amounts of money for political favors. We would see that at the, you know, the lower levels, not the politicians per se, but, you know, permanent secretaries, managers in government who would accept larger bribes for, or smaller bribes rather, for political favors. So again, it could be along the lines of, you know, jumping a line, essentially, getting things done for you without the due process, essentially. So that is what political corruption and bureaucratic corruption tends to go into.
Mm-hmm. Well, not to reiterate what my co-panelists have said, but I wanted to go more into how corruption has been defined in Barbados, because we have a lot of theoretical definitions, but I find that the practice is not ingrained in our culture. Many times we learn about what corruption is when we get to higher learning, and many persons don't get that opportunity to be able to understand what it is. And even if they do, by then you have spent your entire life up to that point practicing a certain way. So it is difficult then to say, okay, I understand what it is in theory. I know I shouldn't accept a bribe, or I shouldn't do this, or I shouldn't do that. And then you go into the real world where these things are happening, They're part of the culture, they're part of the organization. Other persons don't even see it as corruption or something that's a punishable offense. And you become part of what is happening. You become a part of the process. Mm-hmm. So I find the difficulty for me is that it is not something that we practice, is not something that is taught from early, is not something that is understood. Because when you ask the average Barbadian what they think corruption is, they might give you some definitions. Mm-hmm. When you give them some examples of what you would see as corruption, they don't see the linkage between these examples and the definition that they either know or sometimes people tell them. So that's where the disconnect is for me in terms of understanding what corruption is and being able to live in a culture where corruption is seen as something that is an offense.
How easy is it though to actually identify and put your finger on corruption? Because when I move around Barbados, there's this notion that most politicians and most people in power are corrupt. They take kickbacks, mm-hmm. and there's all this innuendo, there's all of this, but there've never been any charges to my mind brought to anybody. There's an Auditor General's report mm-hmm. yearly filled with suspicious activity, but yet you don't see anybody coming before the law courts or being held accountable. So the question really is, how easy is it to put the finger on this big, almost can't see elephant in the room?
No.
Big pink elephant can't see, be seen.
These are the two problems that we have. When you take into consideration that we have a prevention and corruption bill that was done in 1929. I don't know who was voting here in 1929. Not me. Not my mother, not my grandmother. So if you could throw your mind back to, for those who were here, what Barbados was like then versus what Barbados is like now. This 8-page legislation is not adequate. But if we had something in place, it would help us to be able to define all those pink elephants that you're talking about. All those things you see that seem like if they're not right, but you don't have something in place to be able to say, let us take this further, let us investigate, let's get to the root cause of what's really going on here. Barbados and Syria are the only two of 185 countries that have taken no further action since signing the United Nations Convention with regards to implementing updated prevention of corruption legislation. And Barbados and Cuba are the only two of 35 countries that have taken no further action since signing the Inter-American Convention Against Corruption. When you go through, as you would have mentioned the Auditor General's report, Devron spoke about contracts and not having an appropriate bidding process. And you're seeing this contract, large contracts, going to one person or some person who would have made a higher bid, and yet they were the ones who would have assumed the contract. If you had legislation in place, then things can happen. And if we did have legislation in place and they went after these persons with the same vigor that they did a man who riding a bicycle without a helmet, or mm-hmm. somebody who got a cell phone in the car sitting down, we would actually be a lot further in terms of preventing these things from happening. But we need to go into this program, hopefully, into the root cause behind why persons don't push for this legislation to be in place, and why even if it was in place, persons might still be afraid to push for persons to be prosecuted under this legislation.
Let me jump in here. So Corey had mentioned, is there anything that we can point to particularly to tell what corruption is? Mm. This current administration sought to pass, or did pass, the Prevention of Corruption Act, but it has not been proclaimed. And if you review the act, there is a definition on what corruption is. It goes into the various areas that they would consider corruption, whether it's bribery, embezzlement, not utilizing of the books, accounts. So it goes into a whole set of areas that best standards or international best standards will tell you what is corruption. But again, the situation is one where the bill has not been proclaimed. So Barbados is essentially utilizing the 1929 piece of legislation, which is obviously inadequate almost 100 years after.
Yeah.
So the first thing I think when we think about corruption is we ask, is it right? So quite often we use these systems of morality, essentially, mm-hmm. as a litmus test to determine whether something wrong is happening. Mm-hmm. I think the typical Barbadian, I would like to think mm-hmm. that a typical Barbadian understands what is right and what is wrong. The challenge, however, is what is right and what is wrong in different contexts. What is right when I have my family to feed and I may have to let's say, pay someone to get my child in school, in a particular school, or call a favor to get a job, or to beg a politician to, you know, give me a little extra something in order for me to survive. So morality is relative to those circumstances. Whenever you have a high level of social inequality, corruption will flourish. Mm-hmm. The average man on the street will continue to use a system in order to survive. And way too often we talk about politicians, but politicians are the ones who are granting the favor. What about those who are able to pay for it? Mm-hmm. That's the private sector. That's the people with the money. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, as we were discussing before we got in the room, Barbados has a glass ceiling. There's a glass ceiling when it comes to the average man being able to hold, whether it's political elites or business elites, to account. Perhaps it's ingrained in the culture of Barbados historically in slavery, but that culture needs to change. So I think that when we try to figure out what corruption is, we do recognize that there's something wrong. We do recognize the effects of it. We do recognize that if you have $5 and somebody asks for $4, in order for you to get through to something and you have to figure out what you're going to do with the balance of the money because you have other bills to pay, it's affecting you. It's hitting your pocket. Yeah? So we do recognize the effects of it, but again, it's survival mode. And politicians and business elites understand.
But let's drill down, though, into this uniqueness about Barbados. Now, Crystal pointed to the fact that Barbados and Syria, 2 out of 185. Mm-hmm. Barbados and Cuba, 2 out of 35. What's so special about Barbados? Or I don't want to sit here and accept that our politicians are any more corrupt than any politicians around the world. But why aren't we adopting, why aren't we pushing for these best practices in anti-corruption? Why? Somebody tell me why.
I would say that it's just the idea that Barbados has a history of being well-governed. And, you know, we consider ourselves, the gem of the Caribbean Sea, hearing these things coming along all this time. So we don't like to see ourselves as, you know, having a whole host of problems. We tend to see ourselves as well-governed, as I said. And, you know, we have all these indexes that say Barbados is not so bad off when it comes to corruption. We have a situation where corruption is often difficult to pinpoint, so the media is not in a position to highlight it because of a whole host of absence of laws such as Freedom of Information Acts and so on. So I can understand why it creates the idea that Barbados is, you know, not as bad as others, and Barbados is unique in this sense, but people need to be more familiar with what corruption is, and there needs to be certainly more education about what corruption is, because it certainly does exist.
I would agree with Devon 100% in terms of this perception that Barbadians are civic-minded. Mm-hmm. And because of that, there's this sense of responsibility by the average Barbadians as well as the politicians that they're doing what is in the best interest of Barbadians. The issue here is that you have the Inter-American Convention Against Corruption, which is the older convention between that and the UNCTAD, the United Nations Convention. And that's been around since 1996. So when you have a convention that's been around since then, you have countries like Jamaica, like St. Vincent and Grenadines, Grenada, Trinidad and Tobago, who have follow-up mechanisms in place. So it's not just having the convention. The convention has something called a follow-up mechanism. And what that mechanism does is to say, this is how well you're implementing this convention. Now, what that does is to inform government action. But Barbados hasn't ratified the convention, mm-hmm. nor has it ratified the mechanism. So you really don't know how the legislation is working. So it's not the existence of law, but it's also the adequacy of the legislation and the performance of and progress of implementation.
Well, let me do this right here. Let me say a good morning to everyone listening, and you listeners who want to become callers, you can give us a call at 434-1790 or send us a WhatsApp 266-4862. Special good morning to all of those holding political office messaging me right about now. Special good morning to you. This is Brass Tax Sunday in association with Williams Industries Incorporated. Forbidden Surprise.
all your lumber needs from us. We have number one treated pine, all different types of plywood, V-joint, siding board, and concrete board. In addition, we have grade 3 2x4s and form play for boxing. Big or small, Brilliant Metals, we have
it all. Brilliant Metals, we have it all. Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Right, this is Brass Tacks Sunday. We're talking anti-corruption. We have in studio with us Joss Drayden. He is a former director of the Trinidad and Tobago Transparency Institute, which is a local chapter of Transparency International. We have Devron Bruce, who's been writing and researching on the topic, and Crystal Howell, who's been commenting and also doing some research on the topic. Now, if I may, we'd like to take a minute just to listen to some of the Barbadians in a project done by Crystal on the International Day of Anti-Corruption. And see what they had. All right, where we get that started? I want to go back and actually let's turn up the ante on this a bit. Now, when you look at Barbados, for years we've been known in terms of best practice in my mind in terms of anti-corruption or having a lot of people in power, you know, doing what it is they're supposed to do when compared to others. Now, in recent times, people have been able to point to, and Devron, you made the point where it isn't that easy to see, so the media can't put their hand on it. But recently, we had a number of cases being brought to the public that looks so clear-cut. But I think that there's been this thing where people fail to actually be able to wrap their minds around corruption in a direct way. Like, for instance, there's been this accusation where a certain company in Barbados have been getting some contracts in relation to some vehicles, and the ministers in relation to these contracts been seen driving vehicles from that company. It's a direct thing. It's big open secret, right? Now, how do you go on to further investigate and put your hands? What is the best practice going forward there to open up, to lift up the skirt and say, listen, there's nothing there, or to say there's something there, let's move to the next step. That is what I'm talking about, because we can't walk about whispering in barbershops and salons and round dining room tables about corruption if it's occurring and do nothing about it. How do you treat to corruption when there is corruption?
Well, the reason why we are walking around whispering about corruption and not being able to treat it is because we don't have the legislative framework in place to deal with the issue. One of the areas that we need to start looking at is the Freedom of Information Act. At the end of the day, when the government spends our money or gives a contract, it is taxpayers' money. That logic alone should tell us that taxpayers and everybody else should have the ability to see how government is spending this money and what mechanisms are in place to prevent the poor spending of this money. We need to have some level of openness and some level of transparency when it comes to the awarding of government contracts. So the first thing we need to do is pass a Freedom of Information Act, if you ask me.
Yeah. I'll jump in here because it may appear to be clear-cut, but there are a number of issues here. One is the procurement process. And there are questions that we can ask. For example, did X minister use his position, mm-hmm. his office, to influence the outcome of the procurement process, which is to award a contract to someone? That is a procurement issue. So again, Devron, in terms of the Freedom of Information Act, we have to follow what is the process. So that's the first stage. The second thing, of course, is what is the relationship between the minister and individuals of that company? Now, Barbados is a small country, so you expect that people will know each other. But the issue here is whether personal relationships exist that would give a benefit to a friend or a family, which is what I mentioned earlier about nepotism, over someone who has the ability to do it. See? So, and that's the second issue. The third issue in this has to do with what benefits is the minister getting from awarding the contract. There are two ways to look at it. One is to look at the whole issue of asset declarations, which exists in the Prevention of Corruption Act that has not been assented to, where persons who are defined as in public life have to declare their income, their assets, and their liabilities. And what you're able to do from just looking at that basic information is to determine the risk. If you come into government with $50,000 in your bank account, you're getting $5,000 a month, and you own a house, and then 3 years down the line, you have a $3 million yacht, then there are some questions.
I want to stop you there. You see, that's my problem, because even if that existed and there were just some questions and whispers and there's no action taken, no investigation, I still have a difficulty. Because if we look at all this thing, we're talking about, I think we got to decide which can come first, the chicken or the egg, because we're saying that Barbados has not ratified this and signed this because we're a bunch of saints around here. When you turn it around now, it is almost like none of this is being seen or discovered because we have not signed or ratified these things. Yeah. And my final point before I go back to y'all is this. So we've seen the whole call for declaration of assets. We've mm-hmm. seen the anti-corruption thing being called for, the Freedom of the Act. But it is almost like those in power, I'm not talking about politicians here, no, those in power, they don't want to shoot themselves in the foot. So they may bring in these things. So the public has asked me in preparation for doing this show, why does it feel like laws are being brought against them? The bicycle tax and the dog tax and the cell tax and the phone tax and you know what I mean? The phone law, everything. But the laws against them, the people in power, cannot be brought. And that is how the people on the outside have related it to me.
And they have a right to feel that way, because there actually are some laws in place and some committees and some investigation, but it's made a joke of and is a mockery. We have a public accounts committee that does investigations into some of the special reports done by the Auditor General. So let me use the last Public Accounts Committee report. This one, I ain't a political person, I ain't a lawyer. I asked what happened that this report that investigated the NHC issue ain't gone forward, ain't final, ain't whatever. You got a whole set of roadblocks in terms of this being laid with the Senate and the political house. Nobody ain't really care about all of that. You understanding now that this is a report that going into the fact that there are housing units where contracts were given to persons that did not have the lowest bid, that even in those cases where the contract could not have been fulfilled by the original person, it was then passed on to another, and the name, given to another company that had a higher bid. On top of that, you would have had the original 96 units at about $260,000 per unit. And then for whatever reason, four more units get tacked on at a cost of about $2 million each. You have a minister who would have written to the chair. So the investigations are being done. The allegations are being laid, but the process to get it further investigated, get something done about it, is being blocked. And you have to then understand what impact this has on the people of Barbados. Anything that...
The ones that paying attention, because a lot are really checked out. They ain't really...
I don't blame them.
But Joshua, coming back over to you, you work with Transparency International. What really can be done? And I'm not saying let's go at every sign of smoke and lock up somebody. I'm saying, where's the investigation? How do you get these things going? Crystal talked about the blocking, the bureaucratic process. We set up things, the Public Accounts Committee. We set up these things. People don't show up. They sit, whatever. You understand? So there seem to be loopholes. And not even loopholes, loop gaping holes in these things. How do we actually bring people to account if there is need to?
Yeah, one of the biggest issues that I've found since I've been here is a lack of public accountability. And this public accountability has to do with the public, mm-hmm. the average citizens, and groups, NGOs, civil society organizations mm-hmm. following these processes. And it seems to be weak. Mm-hmm. So public accountability is weak simply because civil society, for some reason, is focused on so many other things, perhaps environmental issues and others. Mm-hmm. But civil society has a role to play. In the case of Transparency International, there are over 90 chapters around the world. And these are civil society organizations. They're not government.
But you are telling me, and I'm going to interject here, this is something if you're real passionate about. You're telling me that we're doomed then. Because apart from being known as this docile society, a lot of these civil societies go cap in hand to the mm-hmm. same government. So how do they then call them out? At the risk of losing their subvention, at the risk of losing that support, I'm telling them right now, ain't coming anyhow, so you could as well start. At the risk of losing it all, they cannot go after these people. That is how I see it. So where do we go from there? Are we doomed? Can we pack up the show and go now?
No. There's a lot of international funding out there. So even if these organizations are going cap in hand to government for subventions, the subventions given by government are a very small fraction compared to the money available. Mm-hmm. There's quite a bit of money out there for good governance project. I just finished a project last year with the Commonwealth Foundation, and they were willing to give up to £50,000 to an organization per year for up to 3 years in a governance project. So for me, I don't buy that civil society. I think civil society has to wake up and smell the coffee and recognize
and understand
that,
the role.
That yes, they do have a role. The media has a role. The media is struggling. Mm-hmm. And we depend on the media as the main actor to blow the whistle. But civil society has a role to monitor government activities, to educate the public, to empower people to speak out. And transparency, for example, there's something called the Advocacy and Legal Advice Center, where people could go into transparency and utilize legal advice for free on issues related to corruption. And that's civil society. That has nothing to do with government.
Excellent.
So, I mean, they're there. Mm-hmm.
Beyond civil society, we also have to just consider the general public. We have to get the public on board and interested in the fact that corruption does a lot of harm to them. We can get them to be on Facebook and all of these devices talking about the recent helmet and do we have to get our vehicles to make a phone call? But yet when we talk about things like corruption, they zone out because they don't see the connection between corruption and the impact on their daily lives. Mm-hmm. So that's where we have to start making the argument that, look, listen, this is something that costs us a whole set of money. We're in an economic situation that's not the best. And, we're talking about all of these approaches to make the situation better. But corruption, or fixing corruption, or dealing with corruption is one of the ways to do that.
One of the ways I usually try to break it down to persons is that if you look at the Auditor General's report and you understand that $500,000 or let's say, $500 million, $500 million, is somewhere cannot be accounted for. And you have a $300 million deficit. Mm-hmm. Understand that you could have probably had a $200 million surplus. Mm-hmm. And you could have had a couple potholes fixed. You could have had a couple more students in university. You could have had less taxes, less NSRL. You could have bought your gas at 160 instead of 190. Now, those are things that people can relate to directly. And I think that's the sort of way we can go to break it down to the people. But talking about the people, let's hear the voice of the people. We're going to give this thing another try, then we're going to go to the telephone line. So remember, you can give us a call at 434-1790.
So what do you think the people at the top, the government, the politicians, the numerous, what are you trying to do?
Well, I think the government cannot do it all by itself.
What about the TRICARE board? Did you go on protection for that day? Like that day, a board like that day?
So an anti-corruption board with auditors and... Yeah, I get you. That's a decent idea, actually.
All of us have to want to speak out against corruption.
Basically, the whole idea of bribing for votes and stuff like that, I mean, it keeps going on. I'm not saying there's something we can or can't do. I think it's more along the lines of literally probably changing everybody that works in government on the whole.
To help stamp out corruption on a government basis, we have to deal more with transparency.
We know that unemployment does breed crime. Crime is what has put the police, the judges, the magistrates, and the politicians and all these people is live off of.
That's the voice of some of the people. Going to take a WhatsApp or two here. Let's see what the people on the WhatsApp they're saying. Say, good morning, Corey. In Barbados, you will only face charges here if you're from the lower class. The corruption white-collar individuals are protected by politicians and those in the who's who. Then the politicians are protected by senior law enforcement. Who's going to change all of that? This one is to the panel. So why aren't you guys discussing election finance, which is the greatest source of corruption in Barbados and has the greatest impact via the diversion of state resources? So just could think about that. And say we must not forget the social and economic costs. Barbados cannot afford corruption. And that's one of the other things I want us to touch on when we come back from this call. Brad Stacks, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Corey.
Hi, good morning to you.
Good morning, sir. How are you and family?
Everybody is fine, thanks. And you?
I am well. Corey, this thing about this corruption is a look. Why there? Look, you can remember when I don't want to call the name, went and carry it up. Corey?
You have any, not hearing you, I hear you loud and clear. You have any questions for the guests in relation to corruption that they can help you, you know,
but
walk
this
you
is
through?
Corruption, then why John King sing the song, I Want a Plantation?
Mm-hmm. All right, we can go.
Ask them to reply.
Mm-hmm. Any reply, panel? All right, thank you very much. Brastax, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning. You're on the air.
Yes, okay. I'm just listening to the program. I'm just thinking about something I would have read recently. I think it would have come from the head of the local bar association, whereby they were dealing with problems with clients, whereby payments that were due in terms of conveyancing were never actually transferred by the attorneys. And their answer to that was to have a fund as the person said it's necessarily a very small fund in terms of, you know, all real estate costs is pretty high in Barbados, so it can't be large. But I'm thinking instead of, I found it strange because I thought that should be something coming from the public and the Bar Association should have something whereby the problem is not facilitated in the first place. So I'm just wondering with if you have that kind of a warp setup whereby the Bar Association has a fund ready for, I'm not going to say if, for when their lawyers, you know, expropriate their clients' funds, why where we had to do something like that in the first place? I'm just wondering if you have that
panel.
Well, I would say that the Bar Association certainly has a role to play in issues such as that. It goes back to issues like, as I said, bureaucratic corruption, where, you know, it's not just the parliament or the politicians who are engaging in these things. So certainly I would agree with the lady that it's something that the Bar Association can certainly pursue, whether it's through public education or whether it's through, you know, help funding with civil organizations that tackle corruption, to just get the word out that, you know, it's not just the politicians that are doing these things, and we have to prevent this culture of corruption that is occurring in Barbados, because we keep blaming the politicians, but the problem goes far beyond. It's really a cultural issue that needs to be tackled.
It's true.
Because, yeah. I mean, when you do these things, it almost creates an environment where it's expected that you must have money when it comes to getting something done in Barbados. And it's problematic because you're already paying taxes for your government to work for you, but yet you have to go to a government office and slip somebody some money to get something done. You're spending money twice. So these are things that people have to start considering when we talk about corruption, just the culture of corruption that's prevalent throughout the society and that needs to change.
Yeah. Well, I'm not as familiar with the particular issue, but I can kind of, you know, try to address some of the things. One is that attorneys, like all professions, have codes of conduct.
Mm-hmm.
So I would assume that enforcing the appropriate codes would be the first step. And if it's an issue where payments are not being transferred based on what the lady is saying, then you're obviously breaching some code of conduct. So the issue is it that bad in Barbados where not even the code of conduct for a professional organization like the Law Association is being enforced? Yep. Is it that bad?
Yeah.
You know?
I actually want to tap back to one of the comments made by the WhatsApp person where they would have talked about the government funds. Now, when I made the video, there were thousands of comments, and whereas it was not the majority, there were too many persons on the thread that wanted to know where they're cut. So a lot of people are still looking to see where they can get their cut. And people, the politicians know that this is what people are looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have a newspaper article that talks about a woman getting 1-2-3s from another politician and there's no pursuit of this kind of culture because we have it so ingrained that as long as I get my cut, it is okay. Or if I was in their place, I would do it too.
Mm-hmm.
We then understand why there is not a public outcry, because people are just simply waiting their turn or waiting to see what
Correct.
They're going to get out of it.
Correct. Normalized so behavior.
If Cultural this is tolerance. If yeah. this is the mm-hmm. culture of the majority, and I'm hoping it is not, but I am worried about the silence and why it's only a few persons that mm-hmm. seem to publicly push for this to happen. Why is this not a public outcry? Because it's not just a matter that people don't understand.
I think that they don't make the connection because a lot of these people actually on the reverse. I ain't talking
about
the
people that don't understand, you know. Mm. There are lots of people who do understand.
But let me tell you how they put it. They actually turned this thing on its head by saying, well, look at them politicians. We wearing the politics and you'll come up with nothing. Were you foolish enough? You understand? Correct. So they actually expect it. And when the people don't do it, it becomes an issue. I got one here for Josh and one for Crystal, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of the WhatsApps. Let me hit Josh first. Does this enthusiastic young man understand that these available monies come with a price? When down the road, these same donors want him to have 2 babies instead of 5 that he wants, what you gonna do? So they're talking about the link between going to these international donors. Talk to me.
Yeah. So those are good questions. The donor community is not as singular in that thought process. Mm. So the donor community is very diverse, and I would agree with the person who sent the WhatsApp that you do have to be a bit more vigilant in terms of what are the donor requirements and some of the conditions. But I would also disagree with them by saying that some of these organizations do not have that kind of influence over local policy. They actually allow you to craft your project and to determine, okay, what are the local issues and the context. So I wouldn't want to paint all donors with the same brush, broad brush, to say that they're all the same. But I would also say that civil society has to be able to diversify its income stream in order to maintain its independence. So whether you receive 50% from government and the other 50% from a number of donors or vice versa, or however you want to do it, the main thing here is being able to do your work independently and to have and maintain that independent voice. And if civil society organizations are going cap in hand to government, then it obviously means that civil society organizations who are doing those things, not all of them, are not independent and they are not legitimate civil society organizations if they cannot speak out on issues. And this is a problem because they represent the people's interests, not government, not the private sector, the people.
I love it. Crystal. We keep talking about the Auditor General's report. I find it strange that the Auditor General Department is the only government department that is working. Is it possible that some of the Auditor General's report may be inaccurate or not properly done?
That will always be a possibility with anything that you look at. If you want me to sit down here and say that a report that was done by persons who are capable of human error would be perfect, I can't say that. However, if you look at the report in its entirety, you will have to say that there are questions that need to be answered. In the report of itself, it does speak to the fact that there are the majority of the posts that are supposed to be assigned to the Auditor General are not filled. So they are severely understaffed. But even with the few resources that they have generated reports that should cause you to ask questions. Why are we not asking questions to get to the bottom of the answers? Why are we so content to look for excuses as to why we should not pursue as opposed to trying to get to the bottom of what's going on when you have millions of dollars at stake? This is my money and your money that want to work for you, It ain't come out to the sky, it ain't follow to a tree. You go work every day, you look at your pay slip, and you see a big bond of taxes come out, and you don't feel no way that a report saying that these funds being mismanaged, you don't want to know for sure what really going on. You don't want to understand why you got to pay more NSRL, more VAT, more duties, more everything else. You ain't got the, I went to St. Kitts. They ain't got, I ain't see a pothole yet.
No.
I ain't see a pothole. I asked the question. He said they might got a 1 or 2 somewhere, but they just. I mean, these things are not normal.
Exotic potholes.
these things that we are living with are not normal. And understanding that we are living with things that may not have to be.
But when people talk like you, people say that you're trying to pull down the country.
I am not trying to pull down the country. I would like, if we could, as possible, keep this to ourselves, because when it goes out there internationally, it does impact us. But it's a discussion for Barbadian people because it's Barbadian money. And we should be able to fix it. It has come out now because it has gotten so bad that we need to start talking about it more. But yes, I would love if we had dealt with this internally and not have these problems to discuss at all. That's the preferred way.
I don't want to make Barbados look bad, but if things are bad,
you gotta say it's bad.
You got to say
gotta
something.
Call a spade a spade. On the WhatsApp, it says, good morning, Corey and panel. I am 100% USA Bajan. Barbados needs whistleblower law to protect those who would speak out against these things that happening on a daily basis. We can talk whistleblower legislation when we come back to this edition of Brass Tacks Sunday, brought to you in association with Williams Industries Incorporated.
You do not have to be a roofing expert to know that a metal sheet will rust where it is joined. That is one reason why the beautiful permaclad U-panel and R-panel roof sheet sold at Williams Metals will outlast other roofing materials. Permaclad, colorclad, and corrugated sheets are cut to the exact length that you will need, up to 40 feet and even longer. That means no joints from ridge to eave. Colorclad sheets come with a factory-painted finish in white, blue, green, red, brown, and yellow, and are fitted with screws for added resistance, tested to withstand high winds up to 130 miles an hour. Get a rail roof supplied at competitive prices. Delivered to you today from Williams Metals. Simply call Williams at Kane Garden St. Thomas, 425-2000, or Lowlands Christ Church, 428-1500.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.